Attending a retrospective of Georgia O'Keeffe's abstract paintings at the Whitney Museum, author Dawn Tripp realized that although she had seen many of O'Keeffe's paintings before, there was a startling difference between the revolutionary charcoals and abstract works that O'Keeffe created as a young artist and the Southwest landscapes, flowers, and representational paintings that she is now most famous for. Curious about this shift in style, Tripp began to research the life of O'Keeffe to discover more about this woman, the evolution of her art, and what may have been the cause of her transformation. Georgia, Tripp's new novel, brings O'Keeffe to life in a story about her years with Alfred Stieglitz in New York and the impact of their relationship on her life, her vision, and her art. The story of how Georgia the girl became Georgia O'Keeffe, master painter, and American icon. Again, the name of the novel is Georgia. It is published by Random House, and we welcome Dawn Tripp to the roundtable this morning. Dawn, thank you very much for being with us. A great pleasure.
I'm really thrilled to be here. Thanks so much for having me.
Very nice to have you on the program. As I mentioned in the introduction, you were certainly familiar with Georgia O'Keeffe. I assume there was some affection for you to want to take this several steps forward.
You know, I had grown up, I was born in 1968, and that was the same year that a portrait by John Lungard kind of graced the cover of Life magazine. It was O'Keeffe in her 80s, you know, wrapped in her black with the Southwest landscape, had, you know, out behind, you know, spreading out behind her, and her face turned it profile with that, you know, that marked, you know, lined beauty that, you know, certain older women, you know, possess, you know, older women who are really sure in who they are, who they've become, and where they're going. And that had always been an image of O'Keeffe that I had held up as I was growing up, you know, a kind of a woman who'd chosen to live her life and make art on her own terms. But when I went to see that show at the Whitney, that show for me was a revelation because I'd always admired her work, but that day I just fell in love with those abstractions. I couldn't reconcile the kind of fiercely, you know, almost revolutionary vision of that young artist with, you know, in the nude photos of Stieglitz that were kind of paired with those abstractions also. But the, you know, just the raw, you know, power of her abstract work and abstractions she continued to create throughout her lifetime with that image I'd always held of O'Keeffe. And I just came away from that exhibit thinking, here's a woman that we all know of, but at some level barely know at all.
Did you know from the very beginning that you wanted this to be a fictional approach to the story?
You know, there's so many stellar, insightful third-person works that have been written about O'Keeffe, and I was familiar with some of them. Obviously, in the course of writing this novel, I read, I think, just about all of them. But I feel that fiction can actually get into a different kind of truth, a more experiential truth that allows us to really enter a character's story and be transformed. We sometimes think of facts as being very solid, but the historical record is always incomplete, and, you know, truth is kaleidoscopic, and it's continually changing depending on our perspective. And I think about fiction as another means of cutting past the surface, and with a first-person fictionalized interpretation of O'Keeffe's life, specifically her East Coast life, I really felt like I could get right into her head. I could get right up against what she might have felt and thought and questioned, you know, what she loved and feared, what she hid and ached for during that period of time, you know, what she dreamed and what she fought for. So that I just felt that fiction could give me a freedom and actually a way of accessing, again, a different level of truth than I would be able to access in a third person work.
In that access, what were you able to access when you think of this young woman, 1916? She's young, she's an art teacher, she's unknown, and she goes to New York to meet Stieglitz. And this is work related.
Right.
What happens?
Well, he, you know, so here was a young Fiercely independent, intelligent young woman, 29 years old when she first met Stieglitz, with a revolutionary vision years ahead of her time. And here was an older man, twice her age, the father of modern photography, a leader of the avant-garde in America. And he recognized her talent. You know, he recognized her potential for greatness. But he also fell so deeply in love with her. And they had this kind of brilliant, nuanced passion between them. And it wasn't just sexual, it was intellectual and philosophic. And later in her life, O'Keeffe would look back and say that it was the art that kept her with Stieglitz. And there's an extraordinary quote in her memoir where she describes him and that sense of being with him as, quote, something hot, dark, and destructive. It was as if something hot, dark, and destructive was hitched to the highest, brightest star. And for me as a novelist, that tension, between something that's so utterly beautiful and vast and wild and free and intense, like that intensity between them, but also that had a really dark, destructive pull that ultimately, confined her, and to a certain extent, she just needed to move away from in order to live her life and create the direction of her career on her own terms.
That confident woman that walked into that office in 1916 is still the confident woman that produced so many of these iconic works later in her life. And as you say, there is this transformation, but it is subtle, isn't it?
Well, it is, and it isn't. I mean, I think about those years when she lived. The novel spans 1917 to 1933, and that's a chapter in O'Keeffe's life that a lot of people don't know about. Again, it's her East Coast life, when she was really primarily splitting her time between New York City and Lake George, where the Stieglitz family had, their home, their summer home. And O'Keeffe is an older woman, would often refer to that period of time in her life as like another life, something back there. Like she seemed to almost distance herself from it. But for me, as I was working through this story, and even as I came to the end of it, it really struck me that those years that O'Keeffe spent with Stieglitz in New York, they were kind of crucible for her. Those were the years when her art was first recognized, when she fell in love, when she craved a child, had her heart broken, became famous, nearly lost what mattered to her most, and resolved never to compromise again. Those were the years when she made sacrifices in her life and key innovations in her art. And in many ways, those were the years that forged her greatness, not because of what Stieglitz or anyone else did for her or to her, but for how she met and overcame the challenges, including the gender bias that she faced, and how she went on to, to resolutely shape her art the way and her life, and to, to live in a place that she loved. Those were the years also that she fell in love with New Mexico. And to me, that makes her story so intensely relevant to today.
There is fascination, at least at my end, and I'm sure anyone in our region, because we are so close to Lake George, of how transformative that place was, not only for her as an artist, but also in that relationship. And you write about it beautifully in the center of the novel, about the time that she would so often spend alone and that she would spend with nature that taught her so much.
Her work went through, some very key, she made some key innovations in her work during this period of time, and a number of them were related to Lake George. I mean, this is when she started painting the flower, the flower paintings. This is when she started making her leaf series, and she worked with a number of organic forms that were so much a part of her life in Lake George, and she would go for long walks through, at Lake George, to kind of get away from the, you know, the constant kind of chatter and bickering at the, you know, at the house. She would leave and go for, you know, hour, 2 hour, 3 hour walks, and then she would come back and work alone in the shanty. And those were the years where she really was working with the natural world. And in many ways, her paintings throughout her life, that sort of, that fascination with forms of the natural world, were not just, it wasn't just her representational work, but it was also how she would take a form, sort of like what she did with the shell and old shingle, which was something she set up as a still life at Lake George. She had brought the shell back from Maine, and she found the old shingle, you know, lying in the grass, and she put them together, and she painted a series of, you know, I think 7 paintings. And in the first one, the, you know, the forms are very clearly what they are. And then gradually, over the course of the series, the shell and the old shingle are abstracted, so that by the end, they almost look like a landscape. And it was that, you know, that relationship between looking at something very, very closely and intensely, and then event, you know, work, you know, looking at it so closely that it ultimately became, you know, an infinite world. That's powerful.
Absolutely.
And thrilling, yeah, as an artist.
Was it ever intimidating for you as an artist to become her voice?
The voice was actually the hardest part for me in the course of writing the novel. It was the hardest part for me, and I also knew it was the most essential part. It took me about a year to find the voice. And I did a lot of research during that period of time. I'd get glimpses of what I thought the voice would be, but I'd get little glimmers of it in pieces of writing, but it just wasn't really, I didn't really own it or have it cellularly. And I think part of that was as soon as I committed to taking on the project, and as soon as I decided that, yes, this was something I wanted to spend the next 2, 3, 4, ultimately 6 years on, I had that question, like, who are you to do this? You know, who are you to take on this story of an icon? But, I believe that those doubts come with every work. And I believe, you know, in some way, shape, or form, they're there. They're kind of sitting on your shoulder and poking at you. And you know, it's important to learn how to put them in their place, but to also take the energy that they bring to spur you on. And I feel that my doubt and my questioning around taking on this story of Georgia O'Keeffe, taking on an icon this way and exploring this lesser-known dimension of her life and experience and writing into what might have been her personal experience, I feel that my questioning about that is actually what held me to a really high standard. I feel like I worked so hard and went through so many drafts, you know, down to the end, like just reworking and reworking and reworking to make sure that that I had it right.
The name of the novel is Georgia. It is published by Random House. Dawn Tripp, a great pleasure to have you on the program. I wish you all the luck in the world with the novel, and I thank you very much for sharing with us this morning.
Thank you so much. It was a joy to be here.
Thank you very much. Again, the name of the novel is Georgia, a novel of Georgia O'Keeffe. It is published by Random House. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.